Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you have a high school senior like I do, you know they've worked hard to get through school, they've pounded away on exams, and they've spent a whole lot of hours filling out college applications. They're ready for that next big step, right? Well, maybe not. Some psychologists say at least half the high school graduates who go to college aren't really ready to be there. That's right, I said at least half. That can lead to poor grades, lost scholarships, academic probation, and even dismissal from college altogether. Today, a conversation about how to rescue failing college careers. With us today is Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a licensed psychologist and co-authors the Double Take Advice column for teens and their parents in the Lawrence Journal World. And he's the author of the books Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Teens and Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. Wes, always good to have you.
Nice to be back.
Before we get started here, lots of crazy happenings in Boston yesterday, Wes, obviously. How can parents begin to talk to their kids, maybe even younger kids, about the Boston Marathon and all the terrible things that happened there?
Well, you know, this is a question I get asked all too often because it seems like every four weeks, something like this happens, if not locally, nationally, certainly. And what we realize is important is that parents have to give the impression that things are in order, that things are under control. I always tell this story when the morning of 9/11, my daughter, who's now 16, and she was about 3 or 4 at the time, we were at Hy-Vee in Lawrence watching TV, and my gosh, you know, the first building got hit, and I at the time told her, well, I think this is probably an accident, as all of us thought. And then the second building was hit, and she looks up at the TV and she says, well, Daddy, isn't that where we were going to go? And, you know, I affirmed that, yeah, that was on our list of things to do.
Right.
And she said, well, maybe they could put the towers back up. Right off the bat, she's thinking, this is, of course, before they'd even fallen, she was thinking, what could we do here to restore order to this situation? And I said, I don't think that's very likely, Melissa. And she said, well, we could still go to New York and see the Fantastics, the musical.
And keep things in order.
Keep things as they were
supposed to be.
Exactly. And so parents need to just, you know, whether they're in Boston or here, we have 24/7 coverage of things. So it's almost like we're there when we see these things. Kids don't differentiate between what's on TV and what's next door. So they will worry. Understandably, you know, will this happen across the street? Will this happen at Liberty Memorial? Will this happen in my neighborhood? And so you really have to remind kids that yesterday one person did something very evil and several billion other people did not, and help them see it in context. And I think the coverage yesterday was actually pretty good. Sadly, we're learning how to convey this message in the media of calm and not over responding, and I think that helps kids be calm and not over-respond. So that's kind of the rule for parents is help kids know in any catastrophe. And it's true if it's a divorce or the death of a family member or a terrible national catastrophe, that the adults really do have things under control and we're doing our best to keep them safe.
Well, that's good advice from Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Let's move on to our main topic today, Wes, which is this whole idea of some kids not being ready for college. You know, this stat shocked me, absolutely floored me. Depending on which study you read, 41% to 46% of students entering college won't graduate at the end of 6 years. A fair number of these never will graduate. And I'm about to send one off to college this fall, so thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, I always like to come scare you every month.
How aware are parents and students of numbers like this?
Not aware enough.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the 50% on the way into the show today.
Yeah.
That's kind of a Dr. Wes-ism, but it's 20 years of working in a college town that brings me to that. And you can't really assess readiness with a scale, but talking to people helps you really get that sense. And I think at least half the kids who go off to some kind of post-secondary education simply aren't ready for that. And what we see is of that group, of the total group, 40% we know won't finish on time or will drop out. But a whole bunch of others really aren't getting as much from the experience as they ought to get for the kind of cash we plunk down as parents mm-hmm. or as a society. So it really is worse than the statistics well, say.
To what extent are colleges and universities sort of recognizing this problem and sort of bearing down a little bit to sort of help kids navigate their first year, particularly when it's that adjustment is so tricky? And please say something comforting here, Wes.
Well, I think it's hopeless for your child yeah. and for everyone. No,
thank you. I do wonder. Yes,
it is. I think the colleges want to be responsive to this. There are kind of two ways to look at this. There's the cynical way and the humane way. The mm-hmm. cynical way is that colleges, to a certain degree, count on that shrinkage. They need it because that way they get the money and don't have to shell out any resources.
Yeah,
Right. I hope people aren't sitting around up at Strong Hall at the University of Kansas or across the street here at UMKC and calculating how much shrinkage they can mm-hmm. get out of a student. I don't think that's really the correct way to look at it. I think that colleges want their students to succeed, and the problem is they have a limited ability to change people's maturity. If anything, maturity vanishes the minute someone unpacks their suitcase in the dorm mm-hmm. and is on their own. And so colleges have done, I think, a lot in terms of providing counseling in the dorms, residential assistance, et cetera, and in the classrooms and advising to try to help kids matriculate. But it's more of a societal problem and more of people wanting their kids to do something that may or may not be developmentally appropriate at 18, barely 18 years of age.
So what's going on? I mean, why are so many kids failing out there, Wes? What are you seeing?
Well, I think that is an interesting question that bears even more study. What we know is I think college is harder than when you and I went. And I think most adults would agree. Now, maybe that's us having retrospectives of what it looks like now. It looks pretty scary to us. Well, I get test anxiety dreams just talking to kids. But I do think it's harder now. And
it's harder. Why?
Well, because there's a higher expectation for certain things. One of the big areas, and I actually was a part of the research on this in the late 80s at KU, to figure out what was causing kids not to matriculate. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it then and now at universities around the country is math, is the math expectation. And we've kind of gotten it in our heads. I don't want to pick any fights with math professors, so if they're listening, just this is a good time to turn off the radio. That we've really pushed this idea that math and reading in the lower grades in high schools is everything. That's a one aspect of No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. And that seems logical. We've got to be able to read. But the level of math expectancy for high school and college is much higher than it was for non-math majors. And that causes some trouble for kids in their first year. Those classes may be beyond their reach. So that's just one issue. There's also the issue of kids just not – a lot of them have grown up in an era of entitlement.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, how much of this is just parents doing too much for their kids? We've read so much about uh-huh. helicopter parenting the last few years, and kids go off on their own, and suddenly, kawam, they're not ready to deal with the real world.
I think it's true. The helicopter parenting is its own sort of issue. I like to talk about the bubble wrap parenting that is also discussed, and that is this idea that you're going to enwrap your child in protection against all things, and so everyone needs to get a reward. And everyone needs to, you know, you have classes where everyone gets a special accommodation at the end of the year or a special award. And everybody gets mad if their child doesn't get a B+ or an A. And you have sports teams where this is kind of the same situation. Everybody needs to be a winner. And we've inaccurately linked that to people's self-esteem. Hmm. Self-esteem doesn't come from assured winning. It comes from adversity and overcoming that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is not how we've taught kids. And so they go to college with a sense that this is something that they, you know, should do and should have. And it really isn't. It's not. And it's also not a giant party. There's another problem we've run into.
I was going to say, how much of this just goes back to that age-old idea that students just want to party the year away and they see an open field they can run through and have a great time for a whole year, and that's by George, that's what they do.
Huge problem. You graduated from Wisconsin.
Wisconsin at Madison.
Oh my gosh, I love Madison, but I think they can out-party Lawrence.
We used to brush our teeth with beer, Wes.
I know this to be true. You go to Madison, and in the street there are people with dollies stacked as high as the students.
Yes,
with
yes,
beer.
Yes.
So it's a lovely town, though. I love it. This is really a huge problem. What I try to tell kids and parents is if you are going to a university to be drunk from Thursday to Sunday, you do not have to pay $40,000 in tuition to do that. This is something you can do essentially for free. And if that is your goal, it isn't a good place to enact that. And we have created a college culture that emphasizes that over learning in general. And it's just not a very good idea.
If you or your son or daughter struggle with that first year of college and can talk to us about it, we'd like to hear from you. And we want to know how you handled it. How did you pull yourself out of it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or you can tweet us at KCUR, uptodate. You know, I got to be a little careful here. Someone close to me in my life is a textbook example of what you're talking about here today, Wes. A young man just had everything in the world going for him, at least on paper, goes off to college and kerplunk, just takes a dive off the deep end and, you know, pretty soon is out of college and is back home again. I was floored by it, absolutely shocked that this kid, I had all kinds of respect for, just had such a struggle with that first year of school. And again, parents aren't aware of just what might lie ahead for their kids in so many cases here.
It's true. And parents, this is the time of year. Part of the reason I thought this was a good time to do this show is April is the harbinger of doom for people who are having trouble in college. And maybe the parent knows that it's coming, or maybe the parent is very surprised at this point. It depends on how self-deceptive the student has been and how much they have or haven't dealt with it with the parent. And so, yeah, parents often don't see this coming, and a lot of the community doesn't. I am surprised to see which students are struggling and which are not. Some of them are the kids who had AP classes, who were the top 10 or 12% of their school, people you're not thinking are going to have this problem. And it's interesting. University of Alabama came out with a list of why people fail out of their college. And it's very much in alignment with what you and I have been discussing. It's not knowing the amount of work required is the top one, not understanding that. So if you have a student who did well in high school, that doesn't mean the kind of work and the amount of work they're going to have to do in college is comparable to that. Other activities, that's where they include the whole partying and Greek life and things that are fine in moderation but become too often the focus. Vagueness about long-term goals. If you don't know why you're there, it's a terrible problem to wake up in Snow Hall at the University of Kansas one day and look around the class and say, how did I get here? Why am I doing this?
What am I doing here?
Yeah. And then there's one that everybody hates to talk about, and it is inappropriate choice of a major. So if somebody's 18, generally they don't know what they want to do. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions. My wife was one, knew she wanted to be a teacher. Most 18 or 19-year-olds don't know what they're doing, so they go into a major that is expedient at that point that will not be too difficult. And a lot of those majors are not successful majors. Yeah. So that's just four of the list. You can Google that, University of Alabama causes of failure in college, and it's really an important list to talk to kids about.
Again, we're talking about kids who struggle with that first year of college. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a licensed psychologist. He co-authors a Double Take advice column for parents and teens in the Lawrence Journal World. Let's go to some calls here. Bill from Overland Park. Bill, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad I got a chance to talk to your Springer so I could condense what I had on my mind.
We never have
Please
that
do,
problem.
Bill.
But I'm a 66-year-old person with an engineering degree from Rolla, and I went to a local city high school in Missouri and did really well, like 13th out of 200. When I got to Rolla, Missouri, I got eaten by sharks.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay, and I quizzed out of all kinds of classes as a freshman because I had some really high-quality high school teachers, mm-hmm. and that just made it worse.
Huh. It made it worse. Why, Bill?
Because then I got 5 hours of A in freshman chemistry and immediately jumped to sophomore chemistry.
Mm.
Yeah, Bill.
Same thing happened. Yeah.
This is so interesting to me because I think you said you were 67?
66 now, but I'm as sharp as I ever was.
I believe you. I can tell that. But I'll tell you what, this is the exact same problem that the 20-year-olds are dealing with. There is some question now about, and I'm going to pick an awful lot of fights today if I'm not careful, whether AP classes are a good idea, which is the current version of what Bill's talking about, AP classes, or is that just a way for the test people to make a profit? And there's some news now saying it's just kind of a way to make money, get the testing, and then the student doesn't really have the learning they need. And Bill is exactly showing an example of that from a couple years back where he had the quiz out and then didn't really have the knowledge and ability to do the classes. And I think people should consume those advanced placement classes carefully.
Interesting. Bill, thank you for the good call.
I mastered chemistry. Everybody that quizzed out of that took chemistry in my high school also quizzed out no matter where they went. I stay speed of comprehension, and what I was going to ask you is if there's classes that a student could take to enhance their comprehension speed or ability, because that was the key that killed me. It took me 7.5 years to get a degree by the time it was all done and because of losing scholarships and government loans. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
What I would say is that there's a big debate always about whether kids have enough study skills, and generally I don't think, with a few exceptions of being test-taking skills, how to attack a multiple-choice test, I don't think usually it's a skill issue. It has to do with time management.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do not, particularly in our busy social media age, if you do not manage time well, this will get you. I think that's on the list from Alabama somewhere, too.
Yeah, Bill, thank you for the good call. Let's go to Cecilia from Leavenworth. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share that I have a niece who left Minnesota to go to college in New York this year and realized very early that she didn't want to be a scientist and she didn't want to study in New York, and she was terrified to tell the family this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of young people, when they realize, gosh, this isn't what I wanted to do, I'm not where I'm supposed to be, they see it as a failure. And I really wanted to encourage parents and family members that were listening to be open to that and to let these young people know that this is not a failure, this is an opportunity. And this is the first time of many times in your adult life that you're going to question what is going on and whether it's the right fit for you, and that it's an opportunity to get to where you need to go.
Yeah, that's a fine point. In our dating show, we always talk about that dating is the process of learning who you don't belong with. And that's kind of the same thing with a major. You go to college and you need to figure out what you're not good at as well as to figure out what you are good at. Now the catch in that for parents reaching for their billfold right now, the catch is that gets awful expensive. Dating is comparatively inexpensive. And I think where parents have to spend some time with kids and where maturity becomes very important is in not having more trials and errors than one can afford. This is one of the reasons we're graduating an awful lot of people into the employment market without marketable degrees. This is a problem. So that's just one aspect of it. But I do agree, kids shouldn't, you know, one of the things we say in our column, I think it's the one on Monday. Yeah, it is. Katie Gio says, don't use the I'm disappointed in you response for kids who fail out of college right now. They are already in bad shape, and the more parents are indicating that they don't approve, the more the kid's self-esteem drops, and it makes it much more difficult to get back up and move.
Yeah. Cecilia, thank you for the call.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about parents, and I'm thinking about myself here. Your kid goes off to school. He's already an adult himself. The ability of a parent to monitor what he or she, the son or daughter, is doing far away in terms of grades, in terms of everything else. What can a parent do? What kind of insights can parents glean from far away?
Yeah, this is a point of tremendous controversy, not only in families, but as we think about what is good. Mm-hmm. In one sense, if the parent is making a family contribution to the education, we would agree that the parent has an investment, literally, in the child's future. On the other hand, a huge part of young adulthood is finishing the process of individuation so that you are able to function independently. And these two things are in a constant state of competition. Mm-hmm. We would say it's a dialectical process where they have to emerge differently. This has ranged – there's a fairly well-known case in Kansas City. It was in the Star where a young woman sued from the Cincinnati Conservatory, sued her parents – or didn't sue them. She got a restraining order against them because their level of monitoring of her included video chatting her while she was asleep, or so the story goes.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is on the far end. Now, have I run into that? I sure have.
Really?
I have run into Skype being used that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has to be a balance between shoring up your investment, which a parent has a right to do, and giving the child appropriate freedom. And that is not a checklist we can hit. It's a process. And I do not believe parents should invest in a failing educational process. I think they have to step back and conserve those resources. But likewise, they don't get to pick who you date. They don't get to really pick a major. That usually goes poorly.
Can parents monitor grades from far away?
Not legally. The question is
whether
you have – no. Once you're 18, in fact, in high school, you are an adult and you can protect your educational records.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, in my opinion, ethically appropriate for a parent who is investing in an education to have a contract with the kid that they do know how they're progressing. Now, if you don't have reason to believe your child is going to struggle, it's okay to hold back some on that till you see how things go. But people tend to hold back sometimes too long. And if you have a failed semester, pretty soon that turns into a second and a third because people just can't wrap their head around the decline. And so parents do have to monitor that. And the kids have some obligation to support that.
Let's go to one more phone call before our break here. Brian from Olathe. Brian, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hey, guys. I'm in my 20s, late 20s now. I was the student that you guys are talking about in a lot of ways. Came from a really nice area in Northern Virginia. Went to a great high school. Took AP classes and passed them. But at the same time, had developed a party lifestyle and was drinking. And a lot of it was from the parents was turn a blind eye as long as you meet expectations.
Right.
Now, when I graduated, that was what I was concerned about, was continuing that lifestyle. But they just had an expectation of, well, next step is to go to college. So I picked Ohio State University, went there, and basically I did the same thing, do enough to try and, at first do enough to try and keep everybody satisfied, but it's too hard in college, the time management. And then, the party from Thursday to Sunday just turned into partying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, struggled through 2 years there. And then the way I got out of it, which is what your question earlier was, I just quit midway through a semester at the beginning of a third year there. And really just took some time at home to address some of the problems that had cropped up in my life. And, just started, as far as going back to school, started when I was the one responsible for it, and I was working to pay for it mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a wife and a kid, and I'm finishing up school, having to do it part-time while working full-time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last semester, and I feel like that's the way that I was able to get through it.
Hey, good for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. That is not only a good story, but I want to congratulate you and give you some admiration for finishing. Clearly, you would agree that that isn't the easy way to do things. You know what it's like to have a young family and to be trying to finish school. And I wouldn't recommend that method. But likewise, I wouldn't recommend someone hanging in there to graduate with a 1.9 grade point average in a degree they don't like. I think a gap year or two is important. A lot of parents completely subscribe to the myth that if they leave, they'll never go back. You are a good example of how many people do go back. There are many good universities, particularly in cities, that cater very nicely to the what we always call the non-traditional student. And I would rather see young people take some time off, work, not lay around on the couch and play video games, and get some life experience. And nothing will make you want to be in college more than work in fast food lanes for a few years. It makes you think, wow, engineering is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great story.
I'm glad you called, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw about why kids struggle in college. And later on this hour, Saturday Night Live's Jason Sudeikis joins us here in the studio. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversations about wrongful convictions and the Higgs boson particle, you can find those in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. On tomorrow's program, we'll look at the origins of America's financial system and discuss how a legacy of conflict and corruption brought us to today's situation. Well, this hour, we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. We're talking about why kids struggle so much in college. SNL's, their first year in college, SNL's Jason Sudeikis will join us here in just a little bit. You know, Wes, you wrote this week that when parents face a failing student, you write this, hard decisions must be made as to the viability of college for the student at this moment in time and in this particular college. Yet far too often, those decisions are deferred for just one more semester and then another without really looking into the greater game plan and the student's ability to run the play. What's happening in that dynamic with the family? Are they just desperate not to give up the dream, Wes? Is that what we're talking about here?
That caller earlier who said don't push the failure side of it is exactly right. This is associated with failure, as opposed to realizing that this method of inventing the light bulb did not work. That was what Edison did. He kept at it 3,000 times until he invented the light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want college students in 3,000 colleges.
Yeah.
But this is proven what doesn't work at this moment. And I specifically said it that way because what doesn't work at 19 might work just fine, like our last caller showed, later in the 20s. And parents want to defer that. Part of it is, and we'll do a show here in the future about what to do with young adults when they're living at home with you. You know, you can't live with them and you can't kill them. It's a mess. And so a lot of people do try to avoid that at all costs. And they think maybe one more semester will do it. And this is once in a while that does work. But you've got to sit down and really ask what went wrong here.
What can
change?
What I don't get is why is it so tough for some folks to wrap their arms around the idea of taking a year off or 2 years off before trying college? I mean, why has that idea sort of gone by the wayside to the extent that it has?
Well, there are two issues. One, if people avoid the gap year right after high school because there's a sense wrongly that you have to matriculate at this certain age.
To keep up with a pack,
That's right. People are somehow going to, get away from you or something. And it is kind of embarrassing and disappointing to a lot of young people if their friends are off at, Colgate and they're sitting here not moving forward or not moving forward as quickly. So there's a bias about that that is not very helpful, because amongst the 41% that don't graduate in 7 years are a lot of those people. They're not going to matriculate at that speed, and they're better off kind of thinking that through at the beginning. Once they've started, that myth of you'll never go back kicks in, and parents don't want the kid to drop out. I've heard it 1,000 times. He won't go back.
Right. Let's go to some calls here again. Let's go to Gloria from Kansas City, Missouri. Gloria, good morning.
Good morning. Your last two callers brought up the topic of the role and rights of parents of college and university students. And this reminded me, I graduated from high school in 1957.
Mm-hmm.
I started out at a small Presbyterian school, and since there was only one man in the philosophy department, I moved to Indiana University. They couldn't find enough resident assistants for the following year after my junior year, so they opened that up to seniors, and then we had to take a course in counseling and guidance. So my senior year, I was a RA in a dorm. In my day of going to college and university, the role of a dormitory all 4 years was in loco parentis.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a transition. And now, I mean, with the changes, they're going from high school, where hopefully they did have some supervision, and then suddenly they have no supervision. We had to sign in and out. We had hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a jump.
Well, it is. And for the listeners not versed in Latin, in loco parentis means to act as the parent. And so you're really saying that the school acted in the role of parent, and that has radically changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It changed some in the 60s. It changed more in the 70s. So, you know, I don't know if we can go back to that at this point, because students would probably throw a fit. But I question at times how much kids are willing to and able to be self-regulating at 18 or 19. The evidence suggests they are not.
Yeah. Gloria, thank you for the call. Jacob from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Jacob.
I was just talking about, kind of like the last caller. I'm a student at UMKC right now.
Oh, good.
And, a lot of my friends, a couple of them, they had to drop out after their first year. And I think the biggest reason was, kind of like your caller before was just talking about, was just that they suddenly have all this free time. And I found a lot that many of the kids who had the most trouble were the kids who had parents who were the most strict. And I think that's because when they are in high school and, they have their activities organized out for the week and their mom is, making sure that all these things are happening, and they get to college and suddenly there's no one there holding their hand on the way to class.
That's interesting, Jacob. Yeah.
The fundamental dilemma of parenting teenagers is how much do you push and how much do you hold your child? And your point is well taken. I, too, have seen this where kids had highly the kids would call them controlling parents. And they were looking at that door like a great mecca. And they have all this overdeveloped sense of freedom at 18 when they go off to college and none of the skills of independence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think parents really do want to think about how to improve independent skills and will and ability, and that comes from giving kids age-appropriate freedom. There are some parents who take that way too far, and I think those kids in college also have problems.
Right.
It's a balancing act, and you bring up an excellent point.
Jacob, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye. Let's go to Frank from Lawrence. Frank, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. This gap year, which is popular in Europe, I was a freshman here at KU in the 60s, and I dropped out, and I joined the Army. But then I came back and finished school, so it was like 7 years later, so it wasn't it still worked.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was in a French class here in the 70s, and the teacher there asked in the beginning, who knows grammar, as just in the general forum, who knows grammar? Three people we raised our hands, and he said, yeah, you see, the older people who had high school in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s knew grammar because we were taught it well, and probably math as well. But these days, the high school is a problem, I think, with students coming in. The last point I want to mention, during the campaign of George W. Bush way back a long time ago, there was an editorial in a paper that mentioned George Bush had an idea to bring vocational education, technical education, up to the level of college, so it would, so when you had it on your resume, it would be equal to a college credit. And that's never happened, but that's what we need more of, because too many people think you have to go to college or university to get a job, whereas technical training is much more important and probably as equal to intellectual training at colleges.
Yeah, that is – I'm glad you brought that up. My wife is a nationally board-certified teacher in seventh grade, and she and I were just – this is what we talk about when we go on dates. You can imagine how interesting that is. Now, we have these very these discussions, and we were just discussing this the other day. And not to pick politics apart here, but one of the outcomes of No Child Left Behind was a substantial deterioration in vocational education, because the tests do not test for any of that. So they needed to get everybody in the school into the little test mode. Now there is a substantial movement back in the direction of exactly what you're saying, and I think we as a society and voters and taxpayers need to support that, because there's a lot of fine jobs that do not require a four-year college degree, and they're good-paying jobs, technical jobs, that young people could get into and do well with. So it needs to become back to being a fundamental part of our high school education.
Frank, yeah, the problem would be that both society and the parents would look down on that. Well, that shouldn't happen.
We would need to break free of that bias. I agree that it exists, and it really has increased in the last 10 years.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay,
appreciate
thanks.
It. Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye. Carrie from Raymore. Carrie, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Like you, I also have a senior who will be graduating in about 4 weeks.
We just need a big group hug here for
yeah,
all of you.
Do,
I'm
going
to reach out and hug.
Well, he last year he started receiving all of these brochures from schools around the area and wasn't really sure where he wanted to go. And then in the fall, he started telling me about where his friends were going, and this person was going out of the area. And I sat down with him and I asked him what he wanted to do. I went away for college, and I think it was a fabulous experience, and I learned a lot about myself and about, you know, how to survive in the world. But I didn't want him to feel like he was pushed into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down with him, and I said, if you want to go away, we'll figure out a way for it to happen. But if you don't, then that's okay, too. So he thought about it. About a week later, he came back, and he said, you know what, Mom? I'm just not ready yet. He said, I'm afraid that if I went away, I would fail out.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I think I want to stick around and go to school here locally, at least for my associate's degree, and then maybe I'll go away. Maybe then I'll think about getting an apartment someplace with a friend who's doing the same thing. But I left it up to him, and I was very proud of his choice to evaluate his own skills.
I'm going to give you more credit than that. I don't think you did just leave it up to him. You had a very intelligent dialogue with him. And almost at the level of being the parent therapist there, you talked with him, you listened to what he had to say, you then kind of gave him a chance to come back to you. I think that was a really good discussion. And I think when parents leave too much of that discussion to the child, they can make a mistake. When they facilitate that kind of a discussion, the child is going to come to some better decisions, as you illustrated really beautifully.
Carrie, thank you for the phone call. And Wes, thank you for the great conversation.
It's been good. We'll
always
do
good
it
to
again.
Have you here. That's Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He writes the Double Take Advice column for teens and their parents in the Lawrence Journal World. Wes, always good to have you.